Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fies, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
Out of the fog, into the smog. Well, we're going to find out where Steve is today. Hal, why don't you catch us up? I know there's lots of sound coming up in this episode.
There is a lot of sound coming up in minute 112. In a hospital room, Steve Rogers lies in a bed, a 1940s radio on the table crackling with a baseball game.
Curveball high and outside for ball one.
The announcer's voice blares.
So the Dodgers are tied, 4-4. And the crowd well knows that with one swing of his bat, this fellow's capable of making it a brand new game again. Just an absolutely gorgeous day here at Ebbets Field. The Phillies have managed to tie it up at 4-4, but the Dodgers have three men on. Pearson beamed Reiser in Philadelphia last month. Wouldn't the youngster like a hit here and return the favor? He leans in. Here's the pitch. Swung on a line to the right and gets past Rizzo. Three runs to score. Reiser heads to third. DeRocher's going to have to wave him in. Here comes the relay, but they won't get him.
A woman in a World War II Army uniform enters, her demeanor cheery. Good morning, she says. Or should I say afternoon? Steve, his eyes narrowing, shifts in the bed. Where am I? You're in a recovery room in New York City, she replies smoothly. The radio continues.
The Dodgers take the lead, 8-4. Oh, Dodgers, everyone is on their feet. What a game we have here today, folks. What a game indeed.
Steve glances at the radio, then back at the woman, his voice hardening with distrust. Where am I, really? There we are.
Well, thanks, Phil Rizzuto.
Go sports.
And we're going to cover baseball, I guess, a little bit here. I don't know that much. I grew up across the river, well, across several rivers, from where the Brooklyn Dodgers used to play. By the time I grew up, Ebbets Field had been turned into apartment complexes, and the Dodgers moved out by you, Brian. So it's all.
Well, I'm in Northern California. Here in Northern California, we hate the Dodgers because they're in Southern California. You know, it's an entirely different ecosystem.
A totally different state, frankly.
So you can't talk to me about the Dodgers, but of course we got the New York Giants out here as well, which is
that's
my
true. Team. Yeah. Now my dad used to go to Giants games up in the northern part, the northernmost part of New York City, and that was an odd place because you could actually hit a home run into the stands that were facing you. So you'd have people, like, as you were trying to hit the ball, where the pitcher was, people directly behind the pitcher could be waving at you and distracting you. So the polo grounds was a difficult place to play.
Yeah. So was it a full circle instead of, because there's a gap in the outfield, right?
Yeah, just about. Yeah, there was wow. It was a kind of a circular. That's Coogan's Bluff, which is probably most people know that name from the John Wayne movie rather than the name of the area where it was from. But now that is also giant apartment complexes. I mean, it's New York City property. New York City real estate is very valuable.
And now, I'm reminded of a couple instances I can recall in the comic books where Steve Rogers betrayed his age and his provenance by referring to the Brooklyn Dodgers in the modern era. He'd say, we're the Avengers. We're not the Brooklyn Dodgers. And it's like, okay, Steve, just a little nod.
Nice try.
The weird thing is that there's still like remnants of Coogan's Bluff where the polo grounds were, and you can go, like, you can get off the subway station and there are like closed off gateways where hundreds of, you know, like thousands and thousands of fans would pass through there just to go. They'd actually have special subway trains that would take you directly to the polo ground so you could watch the baseball game and then come home. And it's really I've been there. Not, I mean, I've, they closed long before I was there. But it's really fascinating to go there because it's a very hilly area of it's right off the Harlem River in New York City, and it's something to see. I mean, it's, you know, nowadays it's all apartments, but it's interesting. I always like seeing just the remnants of stuff. You can still see. It's kind of like if you're in New York and you go to Penn Station, the old Penn Station got torn down. They just kind of lopped it off at ground level. But as you go down, you can still see the remnants of what used to be there, the stanchions that held up this beautiful cathedral-like archway in Penn Station. It's sad, but it's nice to know that you can still catch little pieces of it.
Oh, that's cool.
And then archaeologists will dig it all up.
Yep.
Right.
They'll find
and
that.
And try to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And wait, they tore it down and started over? Why would they
or
do that?
Or it'll be beneath Planet of the Apes.
That's what I was thinking, to find James Franciscus and all that. So
yeah, exactly. And an ICBM.
Yeah.
So Jim, you're talking about the subway that would take you direct, direct to the stadium. Would that have been, when they talked about in that era of baseball, the Subway Series?
The Dodgers and the Dodgers and the Giants. The Giants were in Manhattan and the Dodgers were in Brooklyn. And then they both headed for the coast, as it were. Yeah. And now a Subway Series would be Yankees and Mets.
Right.
And you can you can get off at the Willits the World's Fair exit to go to what used to be Shea Stadium, but I think it's now Citibank Stadium. So it's just, everything changes.
When the Giants played the A's in the World Series in 1989, you could take the BART train from one stadium to the other.
It was a BART series. Oh, that's interesting.
It was a BART series. almost all the way to Candlestick.
And see, me throwing out a term like Subway Series is an example of me skillfully and very, very superficially participating in a conversation about sports. There's a phrase I've heard of, and I'm making it a question because I'm not sure and I don't have a leg to stand on, but put it out there.
Good, smart question.
And it will further things. Now, I failed miserably with that tactic just recently. Thankfully, it was a room full of people, but most of whom work for me, so they can only mock me to a certain degree. But also who all know that I was born without the sports gene and I don't speak that language. But there was some reference to the Cardinals. And I said something mildly pithy about Stan Musial. Okay. Mm. He's the only famous St. Louis Cardinal I know. And everybody sort of stopped and stared. So what? He was a Cardinal, I swear. I'd look it up. You know, go to Wikipedia. And I said, we're talking about the Arizona Cardinals. The football Cardinals. Wait, so there's a football Cardinals and are the baseball Cardinals still around? I was very angry about this. Yes, and they very patiently explained it to me. And then as it turned out, the conversation came about because the Arizona Cardinals have a custom 777 that they travel in, and they sent that to our show for one of the days to be
Then you were back. I can talk about this. Let me take that.
I went right on down there, ran up onto the airplane. Stan Musial, right?
Nobody tell Hal about the baseball and football Giants. Let's let that go.
Or the hockey and baseball Rangers. That's another one.
Yeah. That's not fair.
I had some thoughts.
Only one name allowed.
about Shields' shoddy spycraft. There's a trope I've noticed, and I can't give good examples for it, and I tried to find some and I couldn't, but it's the fake backdrop meant to pass as a real landscape. And I've seen it, and it's almost like Truman Show, not quite Truman Show, but I remember very vividly an episode of the original Mission Impossible where they're trying to convince a bad guy that he's 30 years in the future, because then the statute of limitations would expire and he could go dig up the treasure they were trying to find. So they put him in a room, much like Steve Rogers' room, with these scrims, these flat painted backdrops of the future city. And that's not going to fool anybody. Anybody with two eyes and binocular vision is going to look out the window and instantly realize that's a flat 10 feet away. It's not a cityscape.
Right.
You know, it's a photo, it's a painting. And what kills me about this little when Steve wakes up is it almost looks like black and white photography out the window. It doesn't even look like a color picture.
Yeah, well, you know, everything was black and white back then, though.
Yeah, And that, you know, and then playing them back this old baseball game, it'd be like, you know, I wake up out of a coma and there's a game on the TV that's covering Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa's home run duel. You know, it's like, right. Well, that ain't right. You know, so I think Shield really dropped the ball here.
It's funny, as soon as you're talking about shoddy spycraft, I assumed you were just going to be talking about the radio thing. And that does seem weirdly sloppy. Like they know exactly, Shield knows exactly when Steve disappeared, and they know, you know, they have all that information. And I just wonder, I tried to sort of pass it off, aside from being a device that has to be wrong so that Steve, you know, starts to realize things, aside from that plot device, I sort of think, well, did they just not have access to like a complete library of recordings? That was the closest thing that they had, and they just would assume he would think it was something like that. But I don't know. I make part of my living helping other people's work get better by correcting its mistakes. So I suppose, you know, somebody at Shield just said, "Oh, old baseball game here." How about
it was
this
the intern.
Close enough.
The intern.
Yeah, it was the intern.
Yeah. Exactly. Why did we? What's that touchstone phone doing on the desk? Yeah.
I need an old ball game, son. Okay, here you go, Chief. Just Googled this right up for you. Yeah.
And then it stopped with a mid-roll commercial for you know, real estate or something. What is this?
But Ed, I can't let this minute pass without compliments to Amanda Righetti, the woman who comes in, the nurse. I'm a fan of hers. I first became aware of her in The Mentalist, where she played Grace Van Pelt for 5 or 6 seasons. Enjoyed that series very much for a while. But Amanda Righetti was in Friday the 13th. She was in The OC. She's made a couple Hallmark Channel movies in the recent years. And I think she's terrific. This is just a small part in a big movie, but it made me happy to see her again.
Yeah, and the only thing she needs to improve in her life is getting a better manager that answers my pleas and requests to get her on this show.
We tried to get her, folks. We
tried as hard as we could. So, Ms. Righetti, if you are listening to the show, we will reopen the microphones and we'll create a new – even if we've finished the series, we'll come back and talk to you because Brian has a lot of questions.
I don't think I realized that she was in the Hallmark movie scene, and I am now pals with kind of the queen of Hallmark movies, Jen Lilly. So, she was a guest during our big air show, and we hung out a bit. So maybe she knows.
Well,
they must know
the
somebody
next
in common.
Yeah, so
we'll get her on. Yeah.
What do you know about? Yeah, what do you know about Amanda? And why doesn't she come on our show? Yeah, does she not like us? Brian's really upset.
She mentioned Brian like by name.
I'm just I'm a fan of an actor. That's all.
No, that's good.
I enjoyed the show, and I enjoyed her work on the show, and it would have been nice if we'd had a chance to ask her about this one, but yeah, there you go. She does a nice job in Captain America.
She reminds me of Megan Gallagher. I don't know if you remember. She's a character actress who's
absolutely
on a bunch of Stark. She's on every – you know, you can tell people that have really good rapport with production staff because they get a lot of – if you see a lot of a guest star that's on a lot of things like William Wyndham, he was probably easy to work with. So you keep getting rehired and rehired. It's a great little part.
And the key there is casting directors too. I mean, I've read interviews with actors who say the only reason I worked on show A, B, C, D, and E is they all had the same casting director who loved me.
That's right. True. Yes. Yeah.
I think of that as I'm working my way through, you know, every episode of Star Trek from the original series on, and I'm in the now into the DS9 Voyager era. And every time I see Junie Lowry Johnson, I hear Billy's voice and Billy Campbell's voice in my head. Oh, Junie, you know, she's the one who, you know, got him the audition for Riker, but then also, you know, got him the Captain Okuna role. And, you know, her name pops up in the credits. It's like, we have a mutual friend.
it's amazing. I mean, she did all of For All Mankind on Apple TV.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And the casting there is fantastic. And it's all, you know, every one of those casting people seems like I've seen them in other shows. So she must really have, you know, they're her regular crew that goes with her. Yeah. And it's like, I've got a great guy for this. I got a great woman to handle this job. And she can plug them in very, very good.
Absolutely.
One more quick note. This is a deep dive. This is a ultimate B-side. But I observed that when Steve comes to and he's lying in the bed and you see his full figure. It's a shot from overhead looking down from the ceiling at Steve lying in the bed. It is almost a precise copy of what Steve looked like when in the comic books in Avengers number 4. When wow. the Avengers found him and they've got him laid out, and he's dressed, he's in disguise as a, he's got soldier's fatigues on. But as he comes to, it's the exact same pose, the same posture, I think almost the same tilt of the head as Captain America had when he came out of the ice in Avengers number 4 in 1963, I believe. I'd have to look that up. But I just thought, I hope that was deliberate, because if it's deliberate, it is such a sweet little nod that only one viewer in 10,000 would catch, and I was one of them.
What do you think S.H.I.E.L.D.'s game is here? I mean, it's like they don't want to upset him.
Right.
But don't you think that, I mean, did they need to make it the 40s? Couldn't they have made it a little bit less time sensitive? How would that?
You could have done it more generically. You also could have done it, you know, Steve's no stranger to working in a semi-secret place that's underground.
Yeah,
you know,
they
you could have done that and avoided the whole
they didn't need Manhattan
problem.
Of all things.
didn't need, no, really, it's real.
A lot of hospitals have interior rooms, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It could be an interior room entirely.
They state that in the next minute or two that, yeah, the idea was to try to ease him into the modern era, but I don't know. They could have been just a blank room with very few features, but I think they were trying to make him feel familiar, or make the environment feel familiar.
Yeah, or the people that were in charge of defrosting him might be in Manhattan. Maybe that's where all the people were. They were at Sloan Kettering or something like that. And it's like, oh, we've done this before, and here's how we did it, and we unfroze the heart first and go, you know. So I know that it's to make the movie happen. But I would have had him waking up in Alamogordo or over at Camp Lehigh, where he started out. You put him in a tent and just let him say, hey, wake up. Here you go, Steve. We're back at Camp Lehigh and you're all better. But got to tell you, you've been asleep for 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while. You know, and then you start using him.
They went to some effort. And I think part of the effort, again, meta, you know, meta filmmaking analysis, is to keep the audience off its balance as well.
Yeah,
because again, if you don't know the story and you haven't been paying close attention, we don't know for sure yet until in the next minute the nurse pushes the little, you know, alert button that has an LED on it.
Yeah,
we don't know that we're not in 1945 till we see that LED. You know,
that's true. Yeah,
and so I think that's part of it too. It's just as a filmmaking tool to just kind of keep us as off balance as Steve Rogers is off balance.
That's a great point, and we, the audience. I wouldn't have any idea that game was from the wrong, you know, the game was from the wrong year. And I'm assuming that's, I don't, did either of you guys happen to look, was there a game in May of 41?
Yes,
between
yes,
the
there, yes,
the,
yes, there, yes, there was.
Okay.
And,
talk to me.
And the center fielder was Pete Reiser, the guy that was up at bat, and he's also the National League batting champion at the time. So him hitting that ball at the time, and the Dodgers pulling ahead, that apparently is a real game that they pulled from. I didn't get the exact date, but it did happen in 1941. And I forget who they said who he hit it to. Was it Littweiler? Up in left field. Anyway, the people on the field and the people at bat are the real folks. So it really did happen.
Great.
It's just, you know, great game, wrong year. And I was trying to find out who the announcer was besides you, Hal. I'm just assuming it was somebody in an editing booth. You know, we need this now, so read this off. It comes across still realistically that you can accept this is what it should have sounded like. Except they got the year wrong. I was trying to figure out with all the stuff that they built, how big are we expecting S.H.I.E.L.D. to be now? Because this is the first time S.H.I.E.L.D. has been, it's no longer the strategic science initiative. Is that the right
reserve?
Strategic Science Reserve. Yes, yeah. Strategic Scientific Reserve, and we know that it, you know, eventually evolved into S.H.I.E.L.D. But I don't know how big we're supposed to be thinking S.H.I.E.L.D. is now. I mean, we're going to find out eventually. But is it like a It's like, I was thinking it's like as big as the CIA or something, but it could also be just a little, it could be that little thing that we saw that that the Strategic Science Reserve was back in the 40s. It's just a little side project that's being covered by you know, some senator is paying for it.
I don't think so. I think they're significantly larger than that now. I think your idea of them being sort of an analog to the CIA or NSA is right on. I mean, we're going to see the Shield helicarrier in the Avengers movie, which is coming up pretty soon in the timeline, and they've already got a flying aircraft carrier, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
So
and
they're in pretty good shape.
And the quincopter and all that other stuff is coming up with that too. So it'll be happening. And then we've got people like Agent Coulson that do we see Agent Coulson in Iron Man?
Yes.
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 Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Because he's always trying to get a meeting with Tony and Pepper
yeah.
is putting him off. And
That's right.
we see that what the whole thing that Shield stands for on his card, which I don't
Right.
remember off the top of my head, but she said, you know, makes the joke about that being a mouthful and, you know, yeah, we're working on shortening it. So
Yeah. And
is that
and
an
the
Iron
gag
Man
there.
though? Or is that Iron Man 2?
I'm quite sure it's Iron Man because Coulson is there. And God, I hope I'm not wrong.
I'm
I
thinking
think
the
you're
same
right because
scene
then
you are.
we introduce Natasha in Iron Man 2.
Right.
But we don't see,
But
but
Coulson is there.
Iron Man ends with Nick Fury
Yeah.
being a shadowy presence in Tony Stark's house
Right, but he
and
might have
introducing the Avengers
been.
initiative.
But
Yeah.
Coulson, this exchange between Coulson and Gwyneth Paltrow is happening off to the side
I know exactly the scene you're talking about. I'm just not sure it's an Iron Man
during
movie.
the whole I am Iron Man thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Isn't
Yeah.
that where that happens?
Yeah. And then
The
in
whole,
between,
nope, I am Iron Man. You know, he's
you're right.
denying it, and
Yeah.
then it says, nope,
You're
he
right.
is.
You're right. Yeah. And then Thor, he takes a lot bigger presence because you have the Thor short that comes out in between. I forget what they call the MCU shorts, but there's one where he's well, you see him picking up there's like a there's a robbery at a gas station and he takes Coulson's out there, yeah.
Yeah, Coulson shows up and gets rid of the burglars. And then he gives her a card and says, you know, don't worry about it. And that's when he also finds it, the now is it the end of? It's not the end of this one. It's the end of, it's
So
the end
many
of
movies.
something where he finds the hammer, Mjolnir. It turns up as you know. We just found this out in the desert.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that all comes before Thor. So I'm not, yeah, I don't have to watch some more. I think that comes at the end
That's
of Iron
well,
Man.
it's got to be at
So
the end
many
of Iron Man
movies. Yeah.
because Thor came out. Didn't Thor come out
Thor is in
about
between.
right? Thor came out shortly before
Yeah, that
Captain
was the
America, which I
post-credit
always
scene.
forget.
Right. Yeah, the
Yeah, it's
post-credits.
post
Yeah.
credits. Before we wander off from this minute, one other thing talking about the spy craft and the things that the subterfuge to create this illusion. It's interesting that they went to the trouble of, you know, firing up the silk screener and making an SSR t-shirt for him. Like
Well, he already had been there and done that, so
well, yeah, exactly. Now he's got the t-shirt. Thank you. But is there, you know, would his you know, with his attitude, would this facade have been any weaker if it was just a plain white shirt? Like we rescued you here, we got you a shirt and some pants. You know, it doesn't have to have the SSR logo on it, but it does.
Or could that be the shirt
It's
that he
a
wears underneath his Iron Man, or underneath his
his
Captain
Captain
America outfit? Maybe that's his, you know, he
America.
just left the, it didn't want to peel it
No
off and start,
skivvies.
you know, risking frost. So,
And once again, I'll just you know point out that that serves to put us the viewers a little more off balance too. Is what's he
Right.
wearing that old shirt for? But I don't
Absolutely.
know. I mean, they didn't. I don't. As far as I could tell, they didn't even give him a mirror to look at himself. So how was he going to do? Look down
Right.
and you know.
Yeah, and I guess they shaved him
Yes.
too. I mean, he looks very well
RSS. Oh,
kept.
wait.
I guess
Yeah.
I'm in the right time and place. Yeah, I'm wearing the
Yes,
shirt.
exactly.
This must be it. Yeah, of
This
course.
must be the 1940s still.
I always think of what year is it?
Yeah,
He
exactly.
does
Yeah,
fuck
every time I
years, you
wake up,
know?
that's
Yeah.
my first question. Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, we've squeezed every last drop of juice out of this particular minute. And I've got to say that I know we haven't recorded it yet, but I know that our next minute is definitely going to be worth listening to because we've got a doozy of a guest coming up. But we do thank you for being a part of this show. of this episode and listening on. If you do have some, if you'd like to continue the conversation that we're having right now about the Dodgers or other things we might or might not know about, we're always available over at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base on Facebook. And if you do like the show, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. It's really important. We don't ask you for money. We don't have a Patreon or none of that. But if you can just like the episode on whatever podcast service you're listening to this, that really helps us. Also, please check out our great big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And I'm telling you, don't miss the next episode. Be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.